Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Tribune Tower. Here till midnight tonight, and we've got Drunks in the News and Straight Out of Context and more coming up, so stay tuned for that. And we are also going to play more Larry from Aurora clips whenever we are ready for that. So that'll be coming up a little bit later on, so stay tuned for that. We are here Saturday night starting at 7 after the Cub game, so we're here from 7 to midnight. We got some great guests coming on. We'll also do yet another round of clips from Larry from Aurora. We have so many wonderful memories and wonderful calls and crazy clips from the great Larry from Aurora. If you're just tuning in, one of our favorite listeners, one of the most memorable callers, and one of the biggest fans of this show ever, Larry from Aurora, passed away, and we're remembering him this whole weekend. So,
and it's appropriate you bring that up at this time, with the midnight movie reviews coming up.
Yeah.
Because he loved reviewing movies.
Well,
and
he called in, and somehow he had, you know, he had screeners of movies. I still don't know how that happened, but he had screeners of movies that didn't come out in the theater for another week, and he would be watching them in his house in Aurora. So Larry had pull, evidently. So anyway, we'll celebrate the life of the great Larry from Aurora, and again, our condolences go out to his family and friends, and I thank them for supporting the show, and I thank Larry in memory for being such a big supporter of the show, to the point where he would call my bosses all the time. So there you go. All right. All right, let's make it official. We always review the movies. If you have a movie comment or a movie question or a review of your own, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for the Midnight Movie Reviews. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, and it is indeed time for the Midnight Movie Reviews. All righty, then. Let's talk to Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. Hey, Eric.
Hey, big guy.
Hey, big guy. Oh, Larry, Larry, Larry. Now, weren't we always just confused when Larry would get the screeners?
Yeah.
I just wasn't sure how that happened.
Because when he would use the word screener, would always throw me for a loop.
I know. And the thing is, I don't think Larry ever just sat down and watched a movie without any other form of some kind of entertainment happening simultaneously. Because every time he called in, the TV was on in the background, you could hear the radio on, and Larry was one of those guys who... Whenever Larry called in, we never bothered to tell him to turn his radio down because he never did.
Right.
You could always hear him in the background. But the thing is, he never got confused.
No.
Because most people, when they call in, if they've got their radio on, they get confused because of the delay. And Larry was right on top of it. You could hear the delay in the background, but it never threw Larry, because I think he was on some sort of delay. I think no. Larry was on his own inner delay.
He liked hearing himself.
Yes, he did.
You know, I was trying to imagine whenever he said, you know, I got a screener here for this movie or that movie. I'm just imagining, like, big, you know, studio execs over at Warner Brothers or Paramount saying, make sure this former wrestler in Aurora gets this screener. We got to make sure he gets it first and foremost. Yes, sir.
That always went through my mind. Honest to God, Colin, that always went through my mind, too.
Yeah.
Like, somehow it's like, we got to get this to Larry. It's very important that Larry and Aurora get this.
Yeah. Maybe he was an Academy member. We just didn't know it.
We didn't know it. There were a lot. I think there were lots and lots and lots of things about Larry we didn't know. That would be my guess. Well, we missed Larry from Aurora. Okay. Now, before we get to the newer movies, Eric came out to see The Warriors on Tuesday night.
Yes.
And we had a great turnout.
Yes.
Unfortunately, the projection was kind of screwed up.
A little bit.
Yeah. There were some glitches in the DVD throughout the entire movie. And I just want to reassure everybody who came to that, who's coming to the searchers, we have a newly minted 4K digital print of the searchers for June that I am told will look exactly like 70 millimeter. And there will be no glitches at all.
Yeah, as long as you're not playing a DVD or a Blu-ray in that theater,
yeah,
you'll be fine.
Yeah. So, but outside of that, but that's and in fact, I got a list from Mike of all the, you know, the 4K digital prints that we can get, and that's what I'm going to choose from now on, because we were having, like, it was driving me crazy.
Yeah.
Tuesday night, but it was fun to see the Warriors again anyway, which is such a great movie. And we had a nice turnout. It was fun, and then the Hawks won that night, so that was good. So, Eric, you sent out this thing about Lena Horne.
Did I?
Yeah. Is that what you did?
Well, I'm curious.
Oh, you mentioned
about
it. You mentioned. Okay. What?
Yeah.
What?
Well, okay. I mean, I'm very confused by the whole thing, because I first saw a tweet from someone in my Twitter feed that someone had reported that Lena Horne had died, but the response was that this person who reported it didn't get the memo that she actually died 3 years ago.
She did. She died 3 years ago.
Yes. So why it was being reported today that she had died again is a mystery to me.
I don't know how it happened.
I didn't follow. I thought it was just like one guy who was confused, because I only saw it in like one person mentioned it in my Twitter feed, and that was it. And then when I just heard on the news break there, I got really confused.
Yeah,
that was from the New York Times.
Yeah,
reported it today too.
Yeah,
it's all over the place.
Her obituary shows May 9th, 2010.
Yeah, I remember.
It would be about 3 years ago yesterday.
Right. So it says 3 years after her death, citizens of Twitter are apparently still mourning the loss of legendary singer and actress Lena Horne. Horne began her career as a dancer at the famous Cotton Club in Harlem. She would become a famous actress, singer, and nightclub performer. Later in life, as an outspoken advocate for civil rights, and remained so until her death in 2010 at age 92. There is a chance that folks on Twitter and Facebook are commemorating the anniversary of her death, which was the day before yesterday, or they have no idea that Horne died 3 years ago. It couldn't have been the first time that Twitter is incorrectly. So basically, the New York Times picked up this story,
amongst others. Yeah,
well,
I mean, a lot.
I know, but Roger just said that it came from the New York Times.
Yeah, so I guess they ran with it, too. So people are apparently getting their facts on Twitter now or something.
Right.
And I mean, you know, you want to double-check these things, obviously, because when it broke the other day, I had no idea. I thought Ray Harryhausen had died already, too.
And yeah, that came across the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he had died, you know, years ago. You know, that's what I thought. Until I saw it on Twitter and everyone was talking about it.
Yeah. Well, Ray Harryhausen did just die this week.
Right.
He did die this week. He didn't.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't fake. That was not. He didn't die a while ago.
Right.
He died this week.
Right.
So, but Lena Horne did die 3 years ago.
Yes.
I don't understand what's going
on. That I was fairly sure about when I first saw the story.
Yeah. She was 92.
Mm.
Wow. All right. Well, we'll see what happens with this. I don't know.
Every time I see Lena Horne, I think of her being on The Cosby Show.
See, I think Sanford and Son.
Because
I'm older.
Sad are we?
I'm older than you. No, what I mean, obviously, it's not all I think of with Lena Horne. Lena Horne was a legend. But, like, there was an episode of Sanford and Son where they got Lena Horne to guest star. And somehow he got backstage. Fred got backstage and said, "You got to come back to my house and perform for my son, Little Lame Lamont." And was, like lied to Lena Horne, basically saying that he had a sick kid at home. You know, that Lamont was a little kid and he was sick. And she should come over to the house and perform. And Lamont is obviously a man, you know, in his 30s.
Yes.
And she's like, "Is this Little Lame Lamont?" It was just, that's what I remember her saying.
That reminds me of the episode of Different Strokes when Arnold pretended to be sick and dying to beat Muhammad Ali.
I guess that's just a recycled sitcom bit that's been done a million times.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
Well, she was also in The Wiz.
She was.
Yeah.
She's in a ton of stuff, man.
Right.
I mean,
way later in life, not just the early stuff.
Yeah.
But she was blacklisted for a while in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, drove her to television.
Yeah.
Away from the movies.
Yeah.
So she kind of got reborn in that area.
Yeah, she was a legend. Lena Horne was a legend. Unfortunately, I mean, you know, she died 3 years ago. So
Chevy Chase should be reporting the story today, apparently.
Okay. All right. Well, here's what we got to do. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do the on-demand movies, one of which I watched this afternoon, Eric.
Oh, I wonder which one that was.
So we'll talk about that. And by the way, I'm looking. I looked up the first one that we're going to talk about. I haven't seen it. Colin, have you seen any of the on-demand stuff or no?
No.
Okay. I may go home tonight and watch Assault on Wall Street. It just might happen. So we have to. So I just looked it up and I was like, well, this has got to be seen.
Yeah.
And evidently Eric Roberts is in it as well. So that right there, that's the key. All right, hang on, everybody. We got a lot to talk about. The on-demand movies are going to be reviewed next, and we'll tell you all about the big new movies that are in theaters. Movie comment or question, 312-981-7200. This is WGN. Nick DiGilio here, the voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower, it is the Midnight Movie Reviews with Colin and Eric, and we cover all the movies, all the possibilities for you to watch movies in the comfort of your own home on demand, and all the big movies that are released in theaters. And Colin and Eric, welcome back, guys.
Hello.
All right, so I mentioned Assault on Wall Street. Eric, tell us a little bit about what you know about Assault on Wall Street.
Well, Assault on Wall Street, why bury the lead? It's the latest film from Uwe Boll.
Yeah.
And the guy that was once responsible for doing a bunch of really bad video game adaptations due to German tax loopholes has transformed his career into doing movies about really sort of violent sociopaths. And the latest one is his latest very social cautionary tale about a guy that everything is, you know, going wrong for him. He's losing his job, and his wife ends up with cancer. So he decides to take it out on the people that have put him in this lot, the people on Wall Street.
Yeah.
And he just bursts in there with machine guns and just going in a blaze of glory.
Dominic Purcell from Prison Break.
From Prison Break
is the lead in this.
Yes,
and it also features get this cast.
Mm-hmm.
It features Edward Furlong.
Yeah,
John Hurd.
Mm-hmm.
Keith David. Michael Paré.
Yeah,
Lachlan Monroe.
Yeah,
and Eric Roberts.
Yeah, Paré has been one of those guys that you know, I mean, seriously, like Uwe Boll really has sort of transformed himself into Ed Wood.
Yeah.
And has really got his sort of repertory company, and Michael Paré is definitely part of that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's one of those things like, how can you not want to see that?
No, I know.
You know?
As soon as I saw the IMDb page, I said, I believe I'm going to spend $6 on this movie when I get home.
Absolutely you will. Yeah.
I mean, that's just got to be special.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question.
I don't know about special, but I mean, if you've seen, you know, like Postal and some of his other films that are just basically about, you know, people just going off with shotguns and machine guns. I don't know if it's exactly the most socially conscious film.
Yeah.
But then again, it's Uwe Boll.
Right.
So he's not the guy I want, you know, on the pulse of America.
Right.
So to speak.
Right. God, unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, now let's talk a little bit about this movie, Jackie.
Yeah.
Which is a Dutch movie from the from the Netherlands.
It's a Dutch movie from the Netherlands, and it's about Dutch twin sisters played by Carice van Houten, who is in Black Book, Paul Verhoeven's film. She's also currently on Game of Thrones. And I'm guessing her sister, Jelka van Houten.
Yeah.
They play Dutch twin sisters who travel to America to look for the long-lost mother. The film also co-stars Holly Hunter.
As their mom.
Yes. As wow. Jackie.
Now what? Wow. I've never heard of this thing before.
Yeah, I just want to know what's happened to Holly Hunter.
Well,
I mean, I know she was on Top of the Lake and whatnot, but she's something I want to see in, like, every movie.
Yeah, oh, I agree.
You know?
Well, she was great on Top of the Lake.
Yeah.
And been weird and awesome. Yeah. And awesome. But, yeah, I mean, I want to see her work more in stuff that's
right.
Not – it's stuff that's, you know, I mean, she's working with Jane Campion, that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned,
mm-hmm.
With Top of the Lake. But Top of the Lake was on Sundance. 6 people watched it.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, not a lot of people saw it. I thought it was absolutely terrific, but not a lot of people saw it.
I stopped watching it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I lost interest in it. I didn't really care, you know, I didn't care about the girl. I didn't care about the police stuff. It seemed like I had seen that before.
Yeah.
I just didn't care.
Oh, I thought
I'd rather watch Bates Motel.
I thought it was great. You know, I know they're announcing a lot of shows getting canceled.
I believe
that's going to happen this weekend where they're announcing.
They did a bunch of them today. There's a lot of stuff came down today.
Now, is Hannibal on that list?
I don't know if they. Hannibal was one of the last ones people were waiting for. I'll look that up.
I really hope it doesn't. I think Hannibal's awesome.
Hannibal's really good.
Oh, my God. And the acting on that, Hugh Dancy is unbelievable on that show. Everybody's
best
good.
Best thing he's ever done.
Without question. And it's creepy, and the stuff they're getting away with at 9 o'clock on a Thursday night on NBC?
Mm-hmm.
What the hell? I mean, did you see the I'll Never Eat Mushrooms Again, Eric? And I think you know.
Well, there's that, and there's the episode where the guy was, like, with the angel stuff.
Yeah, with the wings.
Oh, my God, was that crazy.
I didn't see. I'm going to watch last night's episode tonight when I get home.
Yeah.
I haven't seen last night's episode. But, you know, how could the show get better? Oh, I know. Let's bring Gillian Armstrong on the show. Gillian Anderson. Bring in Gillian Anderson.
Gillian Anderson, yeah.
Yeah, bring her in. Okay. All right. So I hope it doesn't get canceled. I hope NBC sticks with it.
It's one of the last shows everyone's still waiting for. I don't see an announcement here.
Well,
on Hannibal yet.
They can't. I'll go. You know what? I'll Dominic Purcell everybody if they.
They renewed Community.
What?
Yeah.
After this season?
Yeah.
Oh.
Ratings are apparently up.
Oh.
Community.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Well, a horrible season, except for the episode that Jim Rash wrote, the Freaky Friday episode. Only good episode of the season.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. And Jim
that was pretty good.
Jim Rash wrote it.
Yeah.
That's you know, and Beth McCarthy Miller directed it. That's it.
Okay.
So, all right, hang on, guys. We got more to talk about, a couple more on-demand movies to talk about, and then we'll get to the big releases and your phone calls. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. News is next. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. We're doing the Midnight Movie Reviews after 12 o'clock every Friday night. Midnight Movie Reviews with Colin and Eric, and we welcome Colin and Eric back. Hi, guys.
Hello. Hello.
All right. We're doing the on-demand stuff right now. We're in the middle of that. Eric, what do you know about Something in the Air?
Something in the Air is a film that I actually saw last year at the Chicago Film Festival. It's a new film from Olivier Assayas, who did the film/miniseries Carlos.
Yeah. And also and it's a terrific movie. He did one of the I Love Paris things, Pierre Jetem.
Oh, he did, yeah.
And he did one of those. He also did Summer Hours, which is a great film.
Summer Hours, Demon Lover.
Yeah.
You guys have done a number of films.
Yep.
This is a film. It's another story. It's a film set in 1968. It's a group of European teenagers basically looking to be sort of a part of the revolution that was going on at the time. Very sort of unmemorable kind of film. We've seen a lot of films about, you know, students who are, you know, friends going through the revolution, and then they have changes and sex and all this kind of stuff. And it's really just sort of hitting those same beats once again, and really didn't have much to say about the time period or offer anything, you know, really interesting in the subject matter that the realm that it's sort of covered by a lot of other movies. I remember very little about the film other than it was just very underwhelming.
Okay. All right. So that's Something in the Air. All right. Now tell me about He's Way More Famous Than You.
More Famous Than You. Okay. Well, this is a film starring Haley Pfeiffer. And if that name doesn't ring a bell to you, she will remind you throughout the film, as she's playing herself, that she had a co-starring role in Noah Baumbach's masterpiece, The Squid and the Whale. And that's how they refer to it in the film, The Masterpiece, The Squid and the Whale.
I mean, I love that movie, but it's not a masterpiece.
Right. Okay. Well, she played, the girlfriend or the girl that Jesse Eisenberg was interested in that movie. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently since that brief 15 minutes, she's acted in a few roles, but has basically sort of become sort of an annoying drunk.
and has not really lived up to the promise that she was going to become the next indie darling. One of the running jokes in the film is that she's confused with Mamie Gummer. So she plays herself, and she co-wrote the film, and she's looking to, you know, sort of make her comeback in Hollywood. And so she's written a script. She has her gay brother involved in doing this, and, you know, I have a reason to bring that up because he's got a gay his gay lover is the gay guy from Ugly Betty, and that's how they refer to him. He is the gay guy from Ugly Betty. Mm-hmm. The film is filled with a number of celebrity cameos, and every time someone comes on screen, you get that kind of resume. It's like, okay. Oh, look, it's Ben Stiller from There's Something About Mary. Ooh, it's Mamie right. Gummer from this, you know. And it's interesting. In one respect, it's interesting that an actress like this would put herself out there to the extent where she's basically playing a very unlikable version of herself. But Haley Pfeiffer in this film comes off as one of the most unbearably unlikable people that I've ever seen on screen. And I mean, seriously, like ever. Like I wanted her to fail. I don't want to see her in any more movies. She's annoying. I mean, the best cameo in the film is by Ben Stiller, who basically writes her off as a nut. But there's nothing interesting about that. The way she's portraying herself, she's just extremely unlikable. And the film itself just grates on your nerves. Is unquestionably one of the worst films I've seen all year.
Well, okay. All right.
Yeah.
It sounds really annoying.
It's beyond annoying.
Yeah.
It's beyond annoying. The way I mean, I get, you know, it's interesting when actors are, you know, spoof themselves or play just very unlikable versions of themselves. You know, Matt LeBlanc does that on that TV show Episodes and whatnot.
Yeah.
But this is just, I mean, she is just so righteously annoying. And unlikable and just a hateful kind of character. And I don't know if that's what she's really like or what the deal is, but she, you know, I never want to see her again.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Then don't worry about that one. That's on demand. Now, tell us about Aftershock, which is also available on demand.
Aftershock is a film that I saw and I believe reported on last year at Toronto Film Festival. And, this is a story, it's a starring and co-written by Eli Roth. He didn't direct this one, but he stars in it as the sort of an American in Chile who's hanging out with a couple of Chilean friends. They're having a weekend out there, and they're partying and whatnot. And after a little while spent out there, a big earthquake hits. And the movie becomes this survival story of them trying to basically get out of harm's way while everything is collapsing and maiming people around them. Shockingly enough, I liked this movie. I'm not a fan of Eli Roth. The director of the film is a guy named Nicholas Lopez, who I'd only known from a couple of, like, weird, strange romantic comedies that I had seen on the festival circuit that he'd done, namely here in Chicago. This is an outright, really crazy horror film that, to me, all the maimings early on was a lot of fun. It's very, very bloody, very gory. The initial earthquake scene is handled with a lot of flair this is really, really nutty. The movie, I think, in the final third, certainly in the version that I saw, takes some real nasty turns. Like it's one thing to have people having hands removed because of the earthquake and stuff like that, and that can be just kind of goofy and fun. It's another to have, you know, like sexual assaults on the streets of Chile because the earthquake unleashes some very nasty patrons in town. And that leads to some really horrific stuff towards the end. So I was not crazy about the third act of the film. I had enough fun during the first hour to recommend it enough, especially now from what I understand that they have actually recut the film, and it's a little less in the way of the stuff that I'm talking about. Now, Nick, you said you saw
it. Yeah, I watched
this afternoon.
I watched it today. Yeah.
I thought it was. Am I correct in assuming?
Yeah. No. It's I don't know. I mean, obviously, I didn't see the original cut.
Okay.
And it does. I mean, it, you know, it gets nastier towards the end of the film. Still.
Yeah.
But it didn't. I thought this was great, man. I just had a blast. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Some quality kills in this movie.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, Eli Roth did not annoy me that much in it, you know.
Me neither.
And I'm shocked by that because I like to punch him square in the face, despite the fact that I liked Hostel and Cabin mm-hmm. Fever. But, yeah, I mean, as a screen presence, the guy is a douche. But he didn't really annoy me in this one. Beautifully directed. This guy, you said he did romantic comedies?
He's done a couple. Like, I did not know what he had done prior to this, and I looked him up, and he had done these, like, these odd romantic comedies with titles we can't say on the air.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I don't, you know, this is a really intense and crazy and way over the top. And I thought it was great. I had a blast. I mean, this is right in my wheelhouse. So, yeah, I thought it was great. Aftershock, available on demand. All right. Colin, why don't you tell us about In the House?
All right.
This is now we're moving on to theatrical stuff now. Here we go.
Yes. In the House. Yeah, this tells a story of a high school English, or I guess not English, it's a foreign language film. Great creative writing teacher, literature teacher, who becomes sort of enamored or, you know, interested in the writing of one of his students, a 16-year-old kid, who starts spending a lot of time at a new friend's house and spending time with, his friend's parents, and begins writing, like, serialized accounts of what he sees in this household. And every essay ends with "to be continued." And his teacher, he gives these essays to his teacher, and his teacher coaches him along, giving him all kinds of writing lessons in the process. And he sort of becomes intrigued by what the kid is writing and what he is seeing. And the overall lesson the teacher is giving this kid is, you know, don't write with judgment. You know, basically learn to be empathetic and your writing will improve greatly. Well, the story, you know, begins to sort of get away from the student as he immerses himself more and more into the lives of these people, as well as into the teacher's life. And more these two things begin to, you know, converge. It's an interesting film. It's a well-acted film, but the tone sort of feels at odds with what is really going on, which isn't quite as playful or as, you know, mischievous as the tone of the film suggests. So you kind of sit there and you watch it waiting for something to happen that will completely turn it on its ear and, you know, take it into a completely unexpected direction. And it never really does. And I sort of blame, you know, the film's score, in a way, for sort of leading me on to thinking I was going to get a movie that is going to just totally take a left turn and get a little crazy. When really, when you look at the film, it's pretty much just a character study of these two characters, the student and the teacher. And so the directorial choices here. It's from an interesting director, the guy who made Swimming Pool and Eight Women, which is a crazy musical. Just didn't quite work. I can't quite recommend it, but I wouldn't say, you know, avoid it at all costs either. It's an interesting movie, just not quite a successful film.
Okay, that's In the House, playing at the Landmark Century Cinema. None of us saw Peoples, by the way.
No.
Which is Craig Robinson and, like, the hottest woman on the planet, Kerry Washington and David Alan Greer. I haven't seen it. I've seen all the interviews and clips. It looks to me like an African-American version of Meet the Parents.
That's how I've been describing it.
I mean, that's exactly what it looks like to me. So I haven't seen it. But if anybody saw it, you saw Peoples and you want to call us, 312-981-7200. It always sends a chill down my spine when I see Tyler Perry Presents on the credits of anything. But at least he didn't write and direct this one, so. All right,
You guys are getting a real trilogy of terror this week. We got Uwe Boll, Tyler Perry, and then Baz Luhrmann. So all your favorites.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, guys, hang on. We got more movies to review coming up. And if you saw anything and you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200.
Along Hollywood Boulevard, some that
Nick DiGilio here on the Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Allstate Studios here on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower, here till 2 a.m. Midnight Movie Reviews continue with Eric and Colin. Welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Eric, tell us about, and I'm really interested in this one. I'm curious about this one. Tell us about No One Lives.
No One Lives. Okay, this is another horror film that they saw at the Toronto Film Festival last year, and it stars Luke Evans as a guy who's traveling with his girlfriend on a little trip and winds up coming across some really nasty characters who have, I believe, robbed some rich people along the way. And they are taken prisoner by these people. I can't really say more than that, mm-hmm. honestly, because this film takes some real crazy twists very early on in the film, stuff that you really don't want to have spoiled for you. The film was directed by the director of a film called Versus from years ago, very very popular cult horror film. The story, I mean, again, it involves, these nasty people, involves this vacationing couple, involves a missing heiress, and there's all sort of role reversals and all kinds of crazy stuff that happened during this film. It basically comes down to Luke Evans taking revenge against these people that kidnapped him and his woman.
Okay.
And again, that's all I can really say. The first act of this film is really quite great. All these crazy things that are going on. It's the kind of film that hooks you real early. Has some really, great. Gore and kill scenes in it. Unfortunately, the film sort of peters itself out. It sort of has all of its best ideas in the setup more than in the execution or executions that happen throughout the film. By the time it's all over, the film kind of settles into something a little bit more routine than how it was set up. And it was very disappointing to see that because, there's a point in this movie where you just it almost reaches a fever pitch where you think, like, oh, my God, where is this thing going to go? And unfortunately, it just never lives up to where it goes in the first act. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a near miss for me, unfortunately. But, Nick, I do recommend, if you have a moment, you might want to check it out.
Oh, no, I saw the trailer for this a while back.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize it was coming out this soon. There's no fanfare whatsoever. It's only playing at, like, I think 5 or 6 theaters.
Yeah. You saw the trailer. How much do they reveal?
Yeah, there's a little much. There's a little more than I would have liked.
Yeah.
Seen the trailer. I mean, I get where some of it's going to go.
Yeah.
I also want to mention that not only did he direct Versus, the man directed Midnight Meat Train. So not forget Midnight Meat Train.
Yes, of course.
Which is a movie that I absolutely love.
Right. So, a film that's actually playing in the background during Silver Linings Playbook.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Another reason to love Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah. So
there you go. Okay. Horror film called No One Lives starts out fantastic, ends up predictable, but you're saying if you're a horror film fan, check it out.
Yeah.
All right. No One Lives playing in theaters right now. All right. We got two more movies to review, including The Great Gatsby in 3D. Colin and Eric, hang on. We've got more movies coming up to review, and that's coming up after the news on WGN. The Midnight Movie Reviews continue, and they do every Friday night. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. And we are still doing the Midnight Movie Reviews. Wrap them up here. Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com are with us. And welcome back. Oh, we lost Colin. Colin, call back.
He'll be back.
Colin, call back. Yeah. So what was People screened, by the way?
Yes, it was.
They did.
Yes.
Okay. I'm kind of surprised. I don't know why.
Getting screened more than Star Trek is.
It's getting screened more than Star Trek?
Yep.
Well, what's going on? Was there not a screening of Star Trek?
There hasn't been a screening of Star Trek yet. In fact, Paramount, pretty much across the country, including here in Chicago, are not screening Star Trek now for critics until the day it opens in IMAX next Wednesday.
Wow, really?
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It's whether they're trying to preserve secrets, is apparently not the case, because apparently if you go to the IMDb page, apparently all the secrets are spoiled there. So there's that. It seems to me that they're trying to now just protect their investment in the film. It seems like they got their good reviews from overseas and the few select people that they showed it to, including the trades. So it's almost like they're like in Vegas, and they're stepping away from the blackjack table. Just like, okay, you know, just give me my money, and I'll take my chances when the film opens. But yeah, no, this is kind of unprecedented.
That's weird.
Yeah, that they're not going to screen the film. That technically you could go see here in Chicago. You know, your listeners can go see an 8 o'clock IMAX viewing of the film before we are allowed to see the movie.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Interesting. We got Colin back. Hi, Colin.
Hello.
All right. So, and Colin, why don't you tell us about Love Is All You Need?
All right. Well, this tells the story of a wedding in Italy between a young couple who have known each other for only about 3 months. And we get to know each side of their family in the days leading up to the wedding. On the bride's side is her mother, played by Trine, Trine Dearholm, who has cancer and who has just finished chemo, but who has also just caught her husband cheating on her with his young accountant. Nevertheless, they're both flying in to Italy for the wedding. On the groom's side is his father, played by Pierce Brosnan, who's a widow and a workaholic and not a nice guy to work for. And these two characters, Brosnan and the mother of the bride, have a bit of a, I guess you'd call it a meet-cute in a parking garage, both on their way to the airport and both realizing they have the same destination, and they just crash their cars into each other. But once everyone has arrived in Italy, of course, the real trouble begins as, you know, secrets get revealed, people drink too much and make fools of themselves, and, you know, the relationship between Brosnan and Dearholm grows, you know, deeper and more meaningful. If this sounds like, you know, another stupid wedding farce like The Big Wedding from a few weeks ago, it's not. It's much more grounded in reality than that film, and actually treats its viewers to some very wonderful performances by the whole cast, especially Brosnan, who I think is a really great performance in this movie. It's directed by Suzanne Bier, who directed a great film called In a Better World back in 2011, and an underrated film called Things We Lost in the Fire a few years back. Before that, this isn't quite on par with those two films, but it's a pleasant enough film that could actually be described as, you know, a wedding movie for people who hate weddings. The main flaw of this movie, though, is in its final act, that sort of belabors an ending that we already know is going to happen, but it goes through the motions anyway of countless, you know, romantic movies that we've seen 100 times before. But this is your nice alternative summer movie for the older crowd, you know, who don't want to pay for a movie that requires special glasses, you know, like last year's Marigold Hotel.
Right, right.
This is that kind of a movie. It's not great, but it's nice, and it's about, you know, the consequences of, you know, acting on impulse when you're, you know, madly in love, you know, in those first few months, and, you know, not really thinking it through. And that's kind of what the movie's about. And it's worth seeing. I liked it.
All right, cool. Eric, what'd you think?
I didn't. And it's funny that Colin should mention it, because the first thing I said after watching this film was, what is really the difference between this and a movie like The Big Wedding? And the answer to me was subtitles.
Did you see The Big Wedding?
Yeah, I actually did catch up with it this week. It's better than The Big Wedding. It's better than The Big Wedding, but not by a lot, I don't think. I think this is a film is sort of a classic case of a director and material that never comes close to meshing. The setup of this film is right in line with the same sort of garbage, American rom-com wedding-type movies that we see. I couldn't believe, watching you get a woman with cancer, cheating husband, and then the meet cute in the parking lot where you find out the two parents are actually, the mother and the father of the bride and groom. Then there are secrets at the wedding that come out, and there's unrequited love there at the wedding. I mean, a lot of it to me played out like The Big Wedding, and that was before I saw The Big Wedding. Then when I saw The Big Wedding, I'm like, that's like Love Is All You Need. I found this movie pretty unbearable at times. I think the best thing about the movie is Pierce Brosnan, who has some moments in the film. But to me, I didn't see a whole lot of difference between, the kind of films that Colin was bemoaning a little while ago and this one. So I was a big fan of In a Better World and her previous work, like Things We Lost in the Fire, and the original version of Brothers that eventually became the Jake Gyllenhaal, Natalie Portman film.
Right.
Which I like that one too. But this one is just, romantic comedy, not her strong suit.
Okay. All right. Quick break. When we come back, we get to talk about The Great Gatsby. From the visionary Baz Luhrmann. All right, Great Gatsby Review is up next on WGN. Stay tuned. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. And we're wrapping up the movie reviews with Colin and Eric. Eric, tell us about The Great Gatsby.
Okay. Well, The Great Gatsby was great, to quote Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah.
This film is the latest updating of the F. Scott Fitzgerald story by Baz Luhrmann. People probably know the story by now, the story of Nick Carraway, the bland narrator of the Fitzgerald novel, who is vacationing, drawn into this this world of rich friends, including his second cousin, Daisy Buchanan, who in the film is played by Carey Mulligan, and their neighbor, Jay Gatsby, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, who is puts together all these glitzy, glamorous, very extravagant parties in the hopes of garnering the attention of his neighbor, Daisy Buchanan, who he once had a love affair with before the war many years ago. So eventually he befriends Nick Carraway and does manage to reacquaint himself with Daisy Buchanan, who is married to the cheating, philandering Tom, played by Joel Edgerton. I think most people know the story of Great Gatsby. I don't know if everyone has read it, but I'm sure those who haven't probably seen the Robert Redford film from 1974 with him and Mia Farrow. And here, to me, is the case of a director who I don't think has read the book either. It's Baz Luhrmann's style. There's no surprise to this audience. I think all of us are not really a fan of over the years. This is a guy who did Moulin Rouge.
That's an understatement on my part.
There you go.
Yeah, I hate this guy's movies.
I'm kind of with you, Nick. I think I'm a little more forgiving of Moulin Rouge than you are.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's his best work, though I think it's a severely flawed movie and I don't recommend it, but still. But Moulin Rouge, Australia, the Romeo and Juliet, which I do believe is one of the worst films I've ever seen in my life. And he's a director that, he's all flash over substance. The guy cannot maintain holding a shot for more than 3 seconds, and you can test that theory by going to this movie, which I don't recommend you do, and just counting how long certain shots last. Most of them do not last more than 3 to 4 seconds tops, and that's including dialogue scenes. And The Great Gatsby, I mean, the novel, which, you know, I was pretty much half of my junior year in high school. It's pretty much my Vietnam. yeah, something that I don't ever need to revisit ever again. But, you know, people have read, who know the book and know the prose, know that the story is not really what stands out. I mean, the story is very simplistic. The sort of the love affair and the tragedy of the love affair is not, you know, not what people, you know, remember the book for. They remember it for the Fitzgerald's writing, and, you know, his themes, and especially all the really blatant symbolism that's in the book, that's including, you know, personified by the tragic love affair that he's telling. And Baz Luhrmann gets none of that. It's watching a guy. It's almost like watching, you know, someone that is probably being wiped out in Assault on Wall Street. You know, the kind of person who's throwing these lavish parties, but not understanding, the actual tragedy of the story. And, you know, if there's ever a story that is ripe for a sort of modernization, at least, you know, sort of, you know, paralleling it with things that are going on in today's economy, here, it's right there for the taking. But Baz gets none of that. And because of the way he's so akin to telling his story, that even just the sort of the generalities of the love affair don't really shine through. DiCaprio is really the only sort of shining light in this film. It's perfect casting of Jay Gatsby, and two, he's the only one that is sort of allowed moments in the film where you can see that he clearly read the book. He clearly understands what the character is supposed to mean and what he's going through. Tobey Maguire may arguably give the worst performance of his career, certainly the worst performance he's given since The Good German. Carey Mulligan, I think Carey Mulligan is kind of perfect casting for Daisy Buchanan, but the way she's written, I think, is sort of more confused than anything else. He doesn't really understand what that character represents. Joel Edgerton, I think, is also as fine as Tom, but I mean, this film, I'm just watching it. What is the ultimate point of this whole thing? I mean, if it's for Baz just to, you know, do his usual style, his fast paced, just, you know, sort of over glamorous style, I think even people, you know, expecting that will be disappointed, because once you get through the sort of the party stuff, that calms down too, and it just becomes just another version of The Great Gatsby. And if you just want to see that dull story just played out through, you know, what you barely remember about the book, just go watch the Redford film, because it's the same experience.
Mm-hmm. All right, Colin.
Well, I'm probably the most forgiving of Baz Luhrmann of the three of us. There's things that I really like about Moulin Rouge and Romeo and Juliet, and I like Strictly Ballroom. And I find, you know, I found Australia to be unwatchable. But this one is more sedate, like Eric was saying. Relatively speaking, I fully expected to walk out of this movie with a headache. Just based on the trailers and everything, an overabundance of style over substance, and there is that. But while it is that, it's not overwhelmingly so. I think Luhrmann in this movie finds more of a balance than he ever has before. I think there's a time and a place for his, you know, shenanigans, you know, the party scenes and all that. And I think after the first 20 to 30 minutes, once the movie sort of calms down and settles into its story, I found it to be probably his most engaging film in quite some time. I thought the actors and the scenes were actually, like, allowed to breathe, and the performances, I didn't think, got lost, you know, in the style as they have in the past. I've never read the book. I've never had to read the book in high school or anything. I've managed to avoid it my whole life. And I think, like Eric said, DiCaprio and I think Carey Mulligan are both, you know, very well cast. I think they're both great in the movie. It's true that, you know, Baz Luhrmann's style doesn't always suit or complement the story, But, you know, I still rather enjoy seeing someone attempt these flourishes in what has traditionally been a very stale genre, you know, the highfalutin literary adaption, than do, you know, a stale, boring adaptation, which I think the Redford version is. Though it may be more, you know, in line with the book. As a movie-going experience, I'd rather see somebody try something like this and fail than not try at all. And I was, you know, I sort of found myself surprisingly moved by the end of the film and surprised overall that the film did not turn out to be the headache that I thought it would. I'm not outright recommending it because it really is an empty film. But as a viewing experience and as you know, and just sort of judging it against other Baz Luhrmann films, I think it's actually one of his better efforts.
Okay. We got to hit the news, and I'll give you my review coming up after that of The Great Gatsby. And, yeah, so there you go. Baz Luhrmann's Great Gatsby with Leonardo DiCaprio. Eric didn't like it at all. Colin, not really recommending it, but liked it more than Eric did. And we'll find out what I think of it afterwards after the news, which is coming up next. Alrighty then, it's the Midnight Movie Reviews wrapping up right now from the Allstate Studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. Colin and Eric gave their reviews of The Great Gatsby. Really quickly, Eric, you didn't like it, correct?
Correct.
And Colin, you didn't like it that much, but you didn't dislike it as much as Eric.
No, I'm more forgiving of it than...
Okay. All right. I will say this. I pretty much hated it. But I didn't hate it as much as I thought I was going to, because I seriously, when I saw the trailer for this movie, the first time I saw the trailer for this movie, I thought perhaps it could very well be the worst movie ever made. I mean, it had the potential, in my opinion, because I hate Baz Luhrmann so much. It's not good by any stretch of the imagination. The only reason that I'm forgiving at all about this movie is essentially just because of DiCaprio. And I think Carey Mulligan is pretty good in the film, too, but I think DiCaprio is great. And I have come to the conclusion, I think Leonardo DiCaprio is incapable of being bad. He's absolutely one of my favorite actors working today. And we were talking about it the other night, Eric, but before I saw the movie,
mm-hmm.
We were talking about trying to think of a bad Leonardo DiCaprio performance. And the only thing that either of us could come up with was The Man in the Iron Mask.
Yeah.
That was kind of the, Colin, can you think of any bad Leonardo DiCaprio?
Not really.
He's been in bad movies.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's not that, I mean, you know, in Romeo and Juliet, it is a horrible film, but he's not bad in it. I'm just trying to, I can't think of any performance that Leonardo DiCaprio has ever given that I didn't like, you know? The other one that popped into my head was Celebrity, the Woody Allen movie. That was the only other one that popped into my head. But
funny enough, playing sort of a jerky version of himself.
Right, exactly. So, I don't know. I think he's very good in this movie, and he's perfectly cast. I mean, if you're going to do The Great Gatsby now, this is the right guy. To cast. The movie drove me nuts, though. The visual, I just can't stand the way this guy makes movies. And I saw it in 3D. I actually plunked down the extra money and saw it in 3D. And it made no difference whatsoever, obviously. And it was just, you know, and I thought Joel Edgerton was ridiculous in this movie. And I don't know what it is about DiCaprio starring in romantic movies where his love interest is with a real lout, but that seems to be a pattern in DiCaprio movies, to the point where, like when I saw Titanic, I'm like, why the hell would she be with Billy Zane? Well, she was forced to be with Billy Zane.
Well, yeah, that was an arranged thing.
Yeah, exactly. But why would she be with Joel Edgerton in this movie? He's such a jerk, and the mustache. Oh, you're the villain. Here's a mustache. I mean, you know. So, the movie drove me absolutely crazy. I will say this: I didn't expect it to be, even though Eric, as you pointed out, even though, as you pointed out, the editing doesn't slow down, but I didn't expect it to be as trying to be faithful to the prose as it was in the second half of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect that to happen. I thought it was just going to be complete ridiculous, over the top Baz Luhrmann idiocy for the entire 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only like that for about an hour or 45 minutes,
yeah,
or so. But still, it's bad. He's you know, and again, no understanding of the material whatsoever. Baz Luhrmann, no understanding of the material whatsoever.
Nope.
I thought Coppola's screenplay was 1,000 times better, because Coppola wrote the screenplay for the Redford version. I thought Coppola's screenplay understood it a little bit better. It was a stately and pretty dry and boring film, The Great Gatsby.
Yeah.
But I think it's much better than this. I really do. And I think the casting was better. You're right, Eric. Tobey Maguire is pretty bad in this film. Not that the character is all that exciting. I mean, Sam Waterston played him in the original.
Well, he's a bland, boring, he's just a representation of Fitzgerald, basically.
Yeah. And and Bruce Dern, played the villain in the he's like 8,000 times better than Edgerton was in this.
Yeah.
I saw The Great Gatsby. I read the book in high school, but I saw the movie when it came out. So I was like 10.
Okay.
When I saw the film.
Yeah.
And I was bored out of my mind when I saw it. And then when I was assigned the book in high school, I'm like, oh, come on, really?
Yeah.
And then I actually ended up, my teacher was really good in high school, our literature teacher was really good in high school and got me to find things in it that I otherwise wouldn't have cared about.
Yeah.
So I like the book. I'm a fan of the book. I think there's some beautiful stuff in it.
Yeah.
But Baz Luhrmann just stepped all over it as far as I'm concerned. It wasn't, but I will. And again, I got to say this. I'm not recommending it by any stretch of the imagination, but it's better than I thought it was going to be. I should say it's not as horrible as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Well, I think the bottom line is, and I think we can all probably agree on this, that apparently this movie is set to make a killing this weekend. Shockingly enough, it's going to make a killing this weekend at the box office.
Yeah.
And I would recommend people that if they are thinking of going out to see Great Gatsby, if you really want to go out to see a movie, about a film, about a guy who is, met by a younger character, who's trying to reacquaint himself with a love from his past and some people who may kill him, go see Mud.
Yeah.
Let's go see Mud.
Yeah. By the way, Mud opened wider this weekend. In fact, if you live in the Lincoln Square area, it's at the Davis now. So it's opened wide, and I'll get to go see it a couple more times now. But as we agree, best film of the year so far.
Mm-hmm.
So really quickly before we get out of here, Roger actually went to go see The Great Gatsby.
Yeah, we went. In fact, students from different high schools were invited to go to a special preview last night. Downtown. We all had to get patted down before we went inside, though, unfortunately. It was better than I thought it was going to be. When I read it in high school, I found it to be a very convoluted story and fairly boring, and so I wasn't expecting much. It was Luhrmann's style, which I really don't care for. Moulin Rouge, to be honest with you, I did not like it all and didn't finish watching it. DiCaprio, I don't like him as an actor, but in this, he was very good. And then the other thing was the whole movie was ruined as soon as I saw Spider-Man come on the scene.
Well, there you go.
So that's my short review.
Yep. All right. Well, nobody liked it, really. So there you go.
It did get applause from the audience, which was mostly high school kids at the end, though.
Was it free?
Yes, it was.
They don't have to read the book.
I was going to say, yeah, they're done. They don't have the cliff notes. They just saw the movie, and they applauded because it was free.
They're going to get an F on their book report now.
Exactly, yeah. All right, so next week we have the highly mysterious Star Trek movie. Is that the only one that we have next week?
That's the main one next week. Hold
okay.
on.
All right.
I got some. There's some other things opening, but that's the main.
But that's the big one.
That's the big one.
All right. Star Trek Into Darkness opens next week. We will have full reviews of that. Colin, Eric, thank you guys very much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
All right. See you later. There's Eric. Bye. There's Colin. And they always review the movies with us on the Midnight Movie Reviews. Quick break. We'll come back, and we're going to play one quick Larry clip and then jump right into Drunks in the News on WGN.